If you want to get your favorite technical news, give the Gizmo Gang a call. Gizmo Sapiens.
Hey, and welcome to Gizmo Sapiens Show. What is it? It's 184.
Wow.
And it's Star Trek Day.
Nice.
Just as another plug, I'm hoping that we can get 16 more episodes in before the end of the year. It is September, so we're at the end of this month. We're hitting that last mark. And so we got to get at least 3 more episodes this month and then have 4 episodes a month for the rest of the year. That's going to be tough, you know, with holidays and everything. But I think it's something we can accomplish. But as I was saying, Thursday was Star Trek Day. 9/8, 2021. It was the 55th anniversary of Star Trek airing on television. It's one of two important Star Trek holidays, First Contact Day being the other. That's why Star Trek is better than Star Wars, because we have two holidays, not one. And the Star Wars side wants to celebrate the Star Wars holiday specials, so... But it was interesting. It was interesting in a couple of ways. So, one, Paramount CBS didn't do anything until 8:30 p.m. Eastern time or 5:30 Pacific time.
Why I didn't watch it live? I caught most of those panels like the day after.
Well, I was busy, and so I didn't catch it. I didn't start watching it until like 9:30. So I had missed most of the announcements, and while I'm watching the other live panels, which some of them were neat because they kind of concentrated on three things. They concentrated on announcements with Star Trek Strange New Worlds, announcements with Star Trek Prodigy, they had Rod Roddenberry on a panel with some of the folks from TNG and TOS. In a remembrance of Gene, because Gene is being celebrated with a documentary on his life and how Star Trek came to being and all of that. It should be interesting. The live panels with the folks discussing things, it was like going to a convention. People would ask questions, except Will Wheaton was the host and he was moderating the questions, and which were already created. And they had a couple panels. The first panel I watched was the Lower Decks. So they had Jerry O'Connell and they had Eugene Cordero, and I forget the girl's name who plays Tendi. Noelle Wells. And then they had the showrunner up there for the show, and they were kind of talking about Lower Decks and kind of that, we're at the mid-season of season 2. Actually, because that happened on... Was it Wednesday or Thursday?
I want to say it was Thursday.
Yeah, well, what? Well,
no, it was Wednesday.
It was Wednesday night. That's right. I'm sorry. I had the date right. I had the day wrong.
Yeah.
But they were talking about, episode 5 is the midpoint of the season, which was coming out in 5 hours from when they were having the show, the live panel. There were no big spoilers on the Lower Decks panel, other than they showed you a little more of the information on kind of a mid-season trailer, and that's out on YouTube that you can see, of what's left in the season. I did enjoy the episode 5 when I watched it the next morning.
It was a fun episode. I enjoyed it as well.
So it was kind of an homage to other non-Trek properties, like the car chase through the promenade of the space station was like the mall car chase scene in the Blues Brothers. And, then they had the bar where Kirk and Spock had carved their names in the bar. was an homage to TOS. They had the Doomsday Machine hanging from the ceiling, and they had, it was also an homage to Generations, because they had Zefram Cochrane's warp, you know, first warp capable ship. Had a model of that sitting in the bar. It was neat. All the Easter eggs were pretty cool.
But that's the thing I like about that show.
Yeah.
It's not... The show itself is okay.
Yeah. Some of the stories are great.
Yeah.
A lot of the one-liners are just amazing.
There isn't anything about that show that's like...
But...
I'm gonna die of laughter.
Correct. But it's fun to watch. And,
it is fun to watch.
And, you know, I look forward to it because it's a fun-to-watch show. You know? I did love the whole... And there's spoilers here, so fast forward if you don't want to hear this. But in this last episode, I loved the fact that Tendi and Rutherford were building models of Federation ships. And instead of it... who makes them? The models? AMT?
Yeah.
American Metal Toys, who was the first licensee of Star Trek ever to make models, and they made model starships and things like that. And they had originally they had a away team kit that had an oversized phaser and communicator and stuff that you could build. But instead of AMT, it was Quarks. But it had the AMT-shaped logo on the box. Although I thought it was pretty cool, their models like had working warp reactors and phasers and deflector shields, and
I'd love to build those models.
Yeah, me too. I also love that they're building the Cerritos, and you look into the observation port where the bar is, and there's Boimler and Mariner are in the. But it was enjoyable. Probably from what I watched, the biggest news and announcements were they gave us the dates of when Star Trek Prodigy is going to start airing, which is October 28th, which means we get, once Lower Decks is over, you may have a week or so, and then Prodigy starts up. And then on November 18th, Discovery Season 4 is starting up.
Back up to Prodigy for a moment. That was initially billed as being a Nickelodeon show. Have they pulled it from Nickelodeon, and will it be a Paramount Plus only, or will it be on both networks?
That I'm not clear about. I know it's going to be on Paramount Plus, because they, in their, if you go to YouTube and watch the trailer, it is... it says streaming. And it says Nickelodeon Star Trek Prodigy. But most of the Nickelodeon, as they've expanded.
Is Nickelodeon's involvement in it just the studio work?
I think it is.
If that's the case, then, I mean, it.
I believe it is.
But you can still bill it as a Nickelodeon show without it being on Nickelodeon.
I think that might be the case, because. Most of Nickelodeon's real properties all exist on Paramount Plus at the moment.
Right.
The only thing that's kind of missing is like, and it's a Nickelodeon property, and they're getting it, but you have like all the back seasons of like SpongeBob SquarePants, but you don't have the latest season.
Well, part of that's going to be the existing contracts that those
they
shows
have,
are currently being streamed elsewhere.
Yeah, and I'm sure there's a sensitivity to that because, with everything that's going on in the MCU universe and Marvel and Scarlett Johansson over Black Widow, all the studios are probably on guard for
those kinds of issues.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can definitely, I can definitely tell you that as of the day the lawsuit was filed, that to Disney, that every one of the studios had their lawyers rework the contracts, you know, any future contracts, to say that streaming rights, you know. And there are some nuances, and we'll discuss that after we discuss the Star Trek Day stuff. But, I mean, some new things have come out that it's really, it's a nuance. on why Scarlett Johansson is kind of pissed over the whole thing, and why, like, Benedict Cumberbatch, he made some statements regarding that recently in the press. But we'll, like I said, we'll cover that after we talk about it. So the other thing is the full Star Trek Prodigy trailer is out there. Kind of gives you a sense of who the good guys, who the bad guys are, and
including the title sequence.
Yes, including the title sequence,
which I wasn't overly impressed with. Maybe it'll grow on me, but
yeah, I don't know.
It didn't impress me.
Yeah, I mean, it is what it is, I think.
But that whole show is not impressing me.
Well, I mean, it's an animated series, which I have no problem with, because some of my favorite original Star Trek stories came from the original animated series that was on Saturday mornings when I was like 3 years old, 3 and 4 years old, and didn't really get into them until I was, you know, 7 or 8. But the where I think, you know, it's supposed to be another serious story, and, you know, it's another way to get more Trek out there. And I know the concept is to, like, get more people involved, or at a younger age. It's that draw-in thing.
That's the part that I'm not sold on yet.
I don't know that that has been accomplished, because it seems the stories are pretty sophisticated.
Well, and again, this is where we go back and say, you know, the PR for these shows have not been accurate on any of them. Mm-mm. I mean, Lower Decks was billed as a comedy. Discovery was billed as, well,
a comedy? I mean,
something entirely different.
Yes, yes. Well, Discovery was supposed to be a, you know, in between Enterprise and TOS. And now Discovery is, you know, 700 years later than Picard. Yeah. You know? And I don't necessarily have a problem with that. I understand that they can change their mind, you know?
I don't have but a problem with that.
The poor story writing from the last season on the resolution of
yes.
The burn still burns me.
It burnums me too.
Yeah. And, you know, it's not that I dislike the... I like some of the characters in the cast.
That's the other thing.
Of Discovery.
I like the background characters more than I do the frontline characters on the show.
Well, I don't even...
And I can never remember their names. That's the hard part. You know, I mean, it's... That show's got too many characters that you're supposed to care about.
Yeah.
And none of them really get the spotlight.
Well, the reality of it is even Burnham doesn't get the spotlight enough.
Yeah.
And, you know, and my curiosity about Discovery season, going into Discovery season 4, I'm hoping when they have stronger storytelling, because I'm sure they've gotten enough criticism on the resolution of the burn. I mean, the rest of the season, the other story with Osira and all of that was fairly good. But, you know, they can't resolve this gravitational anomaly, which is supposed to be the big antagonist of the fourth season, you know, by having a crybaby Kelpian, you know, having a temper tantrum, and that causes all the dilithium in the universe to explode.
Yeah, that was so weak.
At least they wrapped it up early in the season. I mean, from a resolution standpoint. But, you know, there's some things that are going to nag me about season 4 from season 3. One of them is Saru is still in the picture. He and Burnham are both captains, but Burnham is the captain of the Discovery. So how is that going to work out? Because in the you know,
he's going to be the captain executive officer,
or like Scotty, the captain of engineering. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they'll work that out. But, or he'll go back to being a he'll take the O'Brien promotion and be a
commander
again.
Well, I've read some things where they said that he's still going to be a captain, and who knows how it's going to work out. But you know, there's other
Saru
things.
Saru has always bugged me as a character. Anyway, he's one of the ones that I'm like, I care nothing about him. If they killed him off, I wouldn't shed a tear.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I shed a tear for Lorca. I wouldn't have shed a tear for Saru. And he had so much potential. Yeah. But the problem is they tried to make Saru like Spock in some respects. He was the Spock of Discovery, but they didn't... There was not enough to distinguish his character from a Kelpian crybaby. I mean, look at the whole first season. It was, that's so unfair that Burnham gets this and I don't.
Yeah.
You know? And... He's kind of an unlikable character. Even when he's doing the right stuff.
Anti-hero at best.
Yeah.
I wouldn't villainize him, but he's not a character I care about.
But, you know, I really have to work hard. You know, with TOS and TNG and Discovery and Deep Space Nine, you can go through the main crew people and then the other... non-crew but main characters in the shows, and you can just rattle them off.
Yeah.
Same thing with Enterprise, you know?
Well, it's because they have names that, like, mean something.
Yeah.
They've turned all these... The problem with Discovery is there aren't enough humans on the crew. I mean, it's... And when they are, they're nobody. I mean, literally nobody.
Yeah.
Now, in order to be the B-list crew... You have to be an alien with some name that's unpronounceable.
Yeah. Well,
forgettable.
Mean, they have quite a few. I mean, Kayla Detmer. You know, I can remember her. She's the helm officer. And then you can't pronounce the navigator who sits right next to her. It's like Olakmasan or something like that.
I was going to say
Yeah.
I don't know. I can't.
And then you have Reese, who's the communications officer, who's the Asian guy in the back.
Uh-huh.
And then there's the unnamed, I mean, I'm certain they've said his name, who's a recurring bridge officer, the black guy with the beard. Not Book, either. Not Cleveland Book. Booker.
I don't remember that guy. So yeah, that's what I'm saying.
And then you had Arium, and the only reason you can remember Arium is because...
They airlocked her.
That's exactly what it is. They airlocked her. But, you know, most of these characters until season 3 did not have a name. Detmer was the only one.
Yeah.
And that was because Burnham's actions with the Klingons in season 1 caused Detmer to have the, you know, the bionic implants.
Yeah. Yeah.
I do think it's strange that most of the Shenzhou's crew, bridge crew, ended up on Discovery.
Yeah. That's also kind of weird.
You know, it's like, well, we don't want to have to hire other actors, so you're both the crew of both ships.
Which is, you know, we talk about the suspension of belief that's required for some of these shows. That has always bugged me. I don't know why you start a show called Discovery on another ship that doesn't matter. And I mean, Discovery didn't show up till like episode 3, right? If I remember correctly.
The very end of episode 2. Well, which was really the pilot.
Episode 3.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, a well, at the
after they
count.
Had after they had done the first, well, because I had Paramount Plus, because I like, this is Discovery, I want to watch it, and you know, you watched it on CBS where they did it as a two-parter, but that first episode was one long 2-hour episode. But I thought maybe it was like a bait and switch where they were like, Star Trek Discovery wasn't about a ship named Discovery, it was about Strange New Worlds Discovery. And so the ship was going to be the Shenzhou or something else, or, you know, which I was fine with. But,
well, had you not read any of the PR, you could have very easily have thought that.
Yeah.
And well, I'd have been okay with that. Is,
you know, with such a superstar like Michelle Yeoh, I really wish they had developed the Philippa Georgiou character a lot more than they did as Philippa Georgiou and not the Empress. Because if they had followed that and maybe...
She's another one. I simply do not care. I don't care. Well,
you don't care about her character because when they threw her character away in the first episode, yeah, and then they bring her back from the Mirror Universe, and they really didn't do anything with her other than make her like a sarcastic foil to
everyone else.
Everyone else, yeah.
Again, anti-hero. I don't watch Star Trek for anti-heroes. I watch Star Trek for heroes.
Yes.
I want to like the entire crew. I want the entire crew to like each other.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't mind a difference of opinion. But when the two lead characters can't stand each other.
Yeah, it becomes annoying very quickly.
I can't.
Yeah.
And usually I won't.
Well, I mean, and to this up to this point now, the best season of Discovery has been season 2. And why has it been the best season? Because they brought Pike,
yeah,
and Spock and Number One and a couple other characters from...
Well, and what they've done there is they've de-emphasized the characters that we were ultimately should care about. The background bridge crew that should have become more prominent.
Yep.
But...
Well, because some of them were replaced by characters off of the Enterprise that Pike brought with him.
Yes.
You know? But even the storyline was great. The whole idea of the AI gone rogue. And I'm tired of AI gone rogue stories, which seems to be one of the popular tropes in all of science fiction right now. I mean, there's a new movie coming out called Warning. And what is it about? It's about man's reliance on AI, and a solar flare causes the AI to start, you know, across the world, all the AIs to go flaky and the world falls apart. I'm like, you know, we're not quite there yet.
Just cast Arnold Schwarzenegger and it'll be fine.
Yeah. It's not an AI. But, you know, I do like some of the characters. I do like Burnham as a character. And the one thing I do like about Burnham is that she has, you know, one of the things you want to see is the character's age. Whether it's from season to season or what, or from movie to movie or decade to decade, you want them to grow because that's part of that suspension of disbelief. You know, you through experience and education, you grow, you change. And I think she's grown.
How?
I don't think she's such a rash decision maker as she was since season one, because that was kind of the thing that defined her in season one, is that, you know, she would make these rash decisions, right or wrong, without ever thinking of the consequences, you know. Like,
if anything, she was one who made a decision and, like, I'm right, you're wrong, we're doing it my way, and if you don't want to do it my way, then I'll do it my way, and consequences be damned. She's had to... come to terms with her responsibilities now include other people, and
yeah,
so,
it doesn't, it's not just her as her on her own,
right?
Yeah,
which is why I find it so unbelievable. I don't think she's had enough time to and experience to make that change. I don't think she's I don't think she's ready for command.
We'll see if that's the case in season 4.
True.
You know. So let's move on from Discovery.
Yes.
Let's talk about my most anticipated show.
Strange New Worlds.
So it was they didn't have a trailer for Strange New Worlds. Now, Strange New Worlds wrapped up production
a while ago.
I think they're keeping it under wrap. It was also the only show that they did not provide a date for when it's coming out. Now, I suspect, and I think it's a strong supposition, that it will be out after Picard, and
which is bizarre
in 2022. Well, if you think about it, so they have five Star Trek shows that have at least a season of production done. We're in the middle of Lower Decks second season.
Yep.
They're going to start Prodigy on the 28th of October.
Which...
And it's unclear if Prodigy is going to be like a 10-episode run or if it's going to be longer like a SpongeBob series.
First of all, I have a problem with that is why run two cartoons right after each other? There's... I struggle with that from a programmatic standpoint. And Strange New Worlds is in the can. It's ready to go.
Well, I think they're trying to build some things up for Strange New Worlds, and I'm not totally sure that post-production is complete, but I would think it would be complete before Picard, because there. And this is the other thing that's a little weird. So, again, October 28th, Star Trek Prodigy is going to air. Then November 18th, while Star Trek Prodigy is only 3 or 4 weeks in, they're going to start Discovery Season 4. And so we know that that's going to be a 10-episode run because that's their typical streaming. Now,
what I think that means is they know Prodigy's not going to be the draw that the Star Trek name really should have.
And it very well could be. Well, you know, part of the problem with the concept of Prodigy I have is that the only Starfleet character or Star Trek character is a hologram.
I'm hearing Chakotay is going to make an appearance.
That'll be interesting.
I don't know how they're going to pull that off, but that's what I've heard. Which is weird, because I thought Robert Beltran had no interest in doing Star Trek ever again.
Once it's animated, find somebody who talks close enough to him. And
fair enough.
You know. Look how many voices. I mean,
he was kind of the Avery Brooks of Voyager.
Voyager, yes. Well, he was not a Star Trek fan, or didn't become a Star Trek fan as being part of the show. But going back to Discovery starts on November 18th. Yes. So we have 10 weeks of that, which will take us all the way through to February of 2022. Then there'll probably be a week or two where there's nothing. And then the second season of Discovery is, or second season of Picard, I mean, is airing in February of 2022. So that runs for 10 weeks. So depending on when it starts in February, that means it's going to get you through March and April and into early May. So probably sometime, which, you know, as far as advertising TV show, TV series, even streaming or not, that, you know, it's going to put Strange New Worlds sometime in that summertime slot and run for most of the summer. And then at the end of the summer, we have Lower Decks Season 3 and we start the whole thing over again.
Is what it is. I don't.
Well, it is. I mean, that's my guess. And you know, the Alex Kurtzman who is now the Rick Berman of the Star Trek properties. You know, his concept was that there would always be Star Trek, you know, a series running through the year. And I don't think Prodigy falls into that concept. I think Prodigy might be like how they traditionally do Nickelodeon series. So instead of being like something that is 10 or 12 episodes or 10 or 12 weeks long, it is something that ends up being like 24 to 36 weeks long. And they won't air all the episodes consecutively you know, they'll air 5 or 6 episodes, and then there might be a 2 or 3 week period where there's no episodes aired, and then they'll air another 5 or 6 episodes, because that's exactly how they do. Nickelodeon does their other prime properties like SpongeBob and stuff. They'll, or as a matter of fact, on SpongeBob, they'll air like 3 episodes, and then there might be 4 to 6 weeks before they'll air another 3 or 4 episodes.
Which is the problem with animation, if you ask me. I mean, they talk about how awesome it's going to be to just, you know, have guys come in and do the voiceovers and whatnot. But all the artwork takes more time than it does to just shoot live. From a production standpoint, I don't see how you could count on that.
Yeah.
But going, that's the same problem I have with Lower Decks.
Yeah,
to be honest.
Well, and I do enjoy the way they do Lower Decks. Like it's a main, they treat it like it's a live action, so that they shoot the 10 episodes, they get it all done, and then they air the whole 10 episodes, the series. But I don't think that might not be the goal, because the goal is to draw young kids in. Young kids don't like watching 10 episodes and then not having anything continuing on.
Yeah,
and the other thing that I think is different going to be. If they do air Prodigy, the episodes really will not be any longer than 18 to 20 minutes long, because on Nickelodeon they have paid sponsorships, so there'll be commercials in there and they have to fit in that.
That's assuming it actually airs on Nickelodeon. If isn't it, just a Nickelodeon Studios project.
That's what I'm saying. So
nobody really knows, which is that's the other thing about Prodigy, that nobody knows what it is.
Well, we're going to find out sooner than later,
I suppose.
So, but going back to Strange New Worlds, which I've been trying to segue back for, yes, how long now? 10 minutes.
I know, you keep going off on tangents.
Yeah, sorry. I mean, there was a lot to cover on Star Trek Day.
I get that.
The Strange New Worlds, the biggest thing they came in and they had the actors who are playing all the main characters, and this is also on YouTube. I'll try to put all the links to the YouTube videos in the show notes so you can just click on it and see them. But so, you know, Anson Mount's first up, and he goes, "Hi, I'm Anson Mount. I play Captain Christopher Pike." Then they have Ethan Peck comes in and introduces himself. Then Rebecca Romijn comes in and she gives her name, her character's actual name, so that you learn.
Which is
Una Chi Riley.
Just call her number one. These characters don't need revealed secret names that aren't canon.
Well, that name's somewhat canon. It was approved by Gene Roddenberry in a... But we'll move on from there. But then, you know, they then flesh out... We knew those three characters were coming. Because everybody wanted to Captain Pike.
Now, let's talk about the characters that are surprises, and then we'll talk about the characters that are not there that should be.
Yeah, that's exactly what I wanted to cover. Okay. So one, they've been hinting at this for 6 or 8 months, that the possibility that some of the TOS characters would come back, obviously played by other people, but they would not be main cast members. And so the big surprise there was that two characters from TOS are going to be main characters on the show. And that is, they're bringing back Uhura as Cadet Nyota Uhura. Mm-hmm. And they're bringing back Dr. Mbenga.
Yes.
And then they...
Now, Mbenga doesn't bother me.
No, Mbenga doesn't bother me at all.
In fact, I like that. I
forget the actor's first name, but his last name was Booker, who played Dr. Mbenga, and he was only in 2 TOS episodes. So that's cool with me. And, you know, and his character was cool because his specialty was actually in xeno medicine, not human medicine. So that opens up a whole lot of things and why he wasn't made the CMO of the ship and everything else. But then you have to ask, what happened to Dr. Boyce from the original pilot?
Thank you.
Because Boyce was Pike's buddy, just like McCoy was Kirk's buddy.
Yes.
You know?
And Chapel.
Hey, yeah, they're bringing Nurse Chapel back. Yeah.
Which I'm okay with.
Me as well. I don't have a problem with that.
I have a problem with that.
You know, she was eye candy in TOS. And Actually, she was eye candy until she became Luxwana Troy, Majel Barrett's character, other than when she played number one in the original pilot, was eye candy. She had 5-10 lines. She was the computer voice, but I mean, in the whole series of TOS, she might have had 5 or 10 lines total. And it was always something like that started with Dr. McCoy, the patient's going into shock. Or
there was that one episode where they took her to the planet that her husband was on, and that was an android episode.
I don't remember that one. I vaguely remember it, but I mean, I don't remember the details.
And the only reason why I even remember that is that I just started watching the remastered.
Oh, TOS.
TOS. And so I've seen it. So I mean, like, that episode was like, okay, she's a legit character, but.
But again, you know, I don't have a problem bringing her back. I actually don't have a problem bringing Uhura as a cadet, because at least they're making it from a timeline. Well, I would have much more of a problem if they had, although it would have been more realistic to do so, because in the second pilot, where No Man Has Gone Before in TOS, where we introduced Kirk, which was the original aired pilot, Sulu is in Science Blue, and so it would have made sense if they had brought Sulu in and he would have been a science officer. And they might still do that.
Sulu is one of the characters that I'm like, where's Sulu?
Yeah.
Let's see if you mentioned the other one that should be there that isn't.
Oh, you mean Scotty?
Yes.
Exactly. Yeah, I agree. Because we also see him in Where No Man Has Gone Before, and he was part of the crew of the Enterprise prior to. And again,
not the chief engineer.
No, he was not the chief engineer. That might be something that, you know, Sulu and the Scotty characters, they might have not been able to, or they might not have contrived a way to make sure that they were part of the cast. And the reality of it is, we don't know how much they're going to use these characters, because frankly, if you're not a Sylvia Tilly was the first time that a cadet had a major role.
Yeah.
And I just don't see them doing that again with Uhura. Particularly since there's other folks, like they introduced that cadet who was getting assigned to a starship as an officer in the
Short Treks
with Pike. I have a feeling we're going to see her. And then they've added two new characters. One of them, the guy, they say he's an alien, but when they showed his picture in the thing, he's an Andorian, which will be cool. Because they're having, I mean, other than Shran and, what was Shran's first officer who then became his wife?
That doesn't matter.
But those were the only two named Andorian characters in the majority of, other than the ambassador in.
I think they only called him ambassador.
Yeah.
I mean, he had a name, but nobody knows or nobody cares.
Yep. And then they have this other lieutenant who is, she has a Spanish name. I can't remember what the.
Yeah.
But she's going to be a main character. She's a human. I'm assuming she's the security chief because they show her in red.
Yeah. I don't know.
But they actually give the name of all of them in the Strange New Worlds kind of reveal. And then Alex Kurtzman also, because he's directly involved with that show. He and Akiva Goldsmith are doing that show together. But he said, you know, they made a big point of saying that Strange New Worlds is going back to the TOS episodic nature of the show and what they're trying to bring out in those shows, you know, which was kind of like what happened with TOS, which was, you know, they could tackle social issues and the morality of using technology or not using technology or whatever. And then it not being like an overarching story that lasts 10 episodes long.
Now, here's my fear about that. Star Trek has always handled those issues best when it's subtle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we don't want them beating you over the head with
it. When they beat you over the head, it's like, Next episode, please.
Well, and so again, it goes back to what I've said for a long time. You know, Enterprise is eminently watchable, even through the whole Zindi thing. I mean, because there were really only two episodes of the whole Zindi War thing that were, as episodes, were just absolutely terrible. It was just, we were tired of these long war story arcs.
Yet, I can watch Battlestar Galactica, like, all day long.
Yeah, but, you know, Battlestar Galactica was, they did a good job in the way they wrote that, like the original TOS.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, I found in the Roddenberry thing, as part of the live thing, speaking of TOS, so DC Fontana started out as Roddenberry's secretary at Paramount.
Correct.
So just think about that, you know? She's one of the best Star Trek storytellers.
But that's because she was so close to the project.
Correct. Correct.
You know, and that's what bugs me about so many of these. I know we go into this J.J. Abrams tangent every time it comes up.
I would prefer not to talk about he who shall not be named.
But that's my point.
Yeah.
Dude didn't care.
No.
Had no connection to the series whatsoever. Yeah. No desire. No fandom for it.
Well, and that's why I, you know, if Alex Kurtzman's directly involved in the project, and Akiva Goldsmith to the large degree, I'm fairly certain it will be handled fairly well. Because if you look at the, I mean, even when Gene was in charge of it, you look at the first two seasons of TNG, where he was actually involved in not only in the as a producer and a director, but as a writer of some of the stories, we have some of those heavy-handed stories.
Yeah.
You know, like the one where Wesley's playing ball on the planet with the and he falls in a garden, you know, in a patch of flowers, and he's going to be executed. Okay. You know, that was a heavy-handed way of introducing the you know, dilemma that they had to fix. My concern is a concern that I have with a lot of TV, which is twofold, which is either starbucking a character.
Yes.
Which can include also, it does not matter if they change gender, but they change race, whatever. And then the addition of having LGBTQ characters just to have LGBTQ characters that never forward the story for any meaningful way.
Like they did on Discovery.
Yes. Yes. The funny thing is, they did it with multiple characters on Discovery.
Yeah.
And two of the four that they did it with, they did it in such a way that it was briefly mentioned, and that's all it had to be done. Arium was one of them. Jet Reno was the other. The whole Culber Stamets thing, their romance does nothing to forward the story along. If their romance forwarded the story along in some meaningful way, you know, it's not like when in the first season
this goes back to the whole thing where the characters are supposed to like each other, and they're supposed to be good people.
Yeah.
And that relationship is not healthy to begin with, and I don't mean you can't be gay and not be in a healthy relationship. I mean, the relationship is not healthy.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and it's not like in the first season when, what was his character? Because now his character was left back in the 24th century, or 23rd century.
The dual personality guy?
Yeah, the Klingon human.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was there wasn't the whole, well, Voke is really who he was.
Yeah.
You know, there was the whole relationship between Voke and Laurel that made sense. As part of the story, but they didn't linger on it. You know, there was just that a couple of scenes in it to make sure to show you that they had a relationship, and then that also you had to establish the relationship to then establish the offspring, Laurel's son.
Yeah,
and then you have Lieutenant What's His Face that Lorca saved, and Burnham, you know, the human side of him, and Burnham developed a relationship, and part of that was to establish trust between them, so that then when it was revealed that he was Voke in human form, that, you know, there was some sort of trust broken.
Yeah. That relationship always kind of bugged me too, because those were two characters that didn't have chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
I knew I was supposed to care about this guy, but I could never understand why. And I knew he was supposed to...
He became superfluous by the end of season two, so...
Right. And if they bring him back for Section 31, which we've not talked about at all this show, because there's no news.
There is no news. Well, and...
Which speaks volumes to me, because for the longest time, it's, oh yeah, Section 31, it's coming, we're going to do it, we're still going to do it, and then Star Trek Day comes, and not a word.
No. So, but, you know, I of all the new series, Strange New Worlds is the one I'm looking forward to the most.
Me too.
One, I just, the chemistry and the quality of the characters of Pike and Number One and Spock were so good. You know, I want to see that continue. And, you know, the other thing, you got to look at the demographics for the show. Star Trek has always been a very diverse show. And people in Star Trek, from TOS to everything today, without hitting you over the head on it, I mean, there's multiple instances where people who've become lawyers and doctors and, you know, admirals and generals in the Army and Navy, and they talk about, like, how Avery Brooks as Sisko was their role model, and they wouldn't have gone to college if they hadn't seen him in that show. And same thing with, you know, Nichelle Nichols wanted to quit Star Trek, and Martin Luther King asked her not to because she was a role model for so many, you know, black youths during the 60s and 70s.
Jimmy Doohan and DeForest Kelly both had engineers and doctors come to them over the years and say, I'm an engineer because of Scotty, I'm a doctor because of McCoy.
Yeah. Well, and you know, and from a person standpoint, Trip Tucker and Montgomery Scott have always been probably two of my four favorite characters. You know, ones that I would strive to be like. And you know, in that instance, I would not be in the computer industry or have studied computer science if I had not, you know, not had them as role models. And you know, there are lots of things I like about Christopher Pike. I mean, as a character, there's a lot for me to identify with that character personally. You know, he grew up on a farm. He grew up with horses. You know, he's a strong leader, but he's not a, he's more of,
I view him more Anson Mount's version, at least, over Jeffrey Hunter. We didn't see enough of Jeffrey Hunter to really.
Well, I don't consider Jeffrey Hunter's performance the. Or, what's his name from J.J. Trek?
Bruce Greenwood.
I don't consider either of them the ones who have created the Pike character. I think the whole second season of Discovery with Anson Mount, you know, what was so strong is they. And again, it was supposed to be Star Trek Discovery, but they really made it about Star Trek Christopher Pike. You know, they created the character and they fleshed him out.
Agreed. Where was I going?
But Anson Mount's version of the character from
is more of a consensus builder. I mean, he's capable of being a
making the decision.
Decider.
Yes. But he wants to involve everybody.
Exactly. Yeah. He wants everybody's input, and then he makes a decision.
I don't want to call him a consensus builder, because I worked for some consensus builders in the Air Force, and some of them were terrible, which is, you know, you're in a staff meeting with 30 people, and you ask all of them to provide input on something, and then at the end you don't have a decision based on any, you know, they didn't have the ability.
Well, that's because he's not a true consensus builder. That's correct. A guy who just wants a bunch of input and not make a decision. A consensus builder takes input from people and then makes a decision and acts on it. That's the way consensus is supposed to work in leadership. You get buy-in from people who have a stake in it.
Yeah. I agree. You know, and I thought they did a good job with, of all the Spock people, you know, I did not, in the 2009 Star Trek reboot, you know, the Kelvin verse, I thought Zachary Quinto did a fairly okay job of being Spock, you know, and being true to being, you know, more Spock. Leonard Nimoy-like.
Right.
But in every subsequent movie, he was less Spock and more Siler. Save the cheerleader. Than he was Spock. And I thought Ethan Peck, he did a great job of being Spock, at least in the second season of Discovery, you know, from the perspective of, like, you know, where Spock was struggling with logic versus his human half and all of that.
I think Quinto was trying to be more Leonard Nimoy, whereas Ethan Peck was trying to be Spock.
Yes.
Yeah. The homage took a different take.
It was trying to be the character as opposed to trying to be the actor.
Yes.
I agree with you there. And
because I think Chris Pine...
He did a great Kirk.
But he was trying... There are elements of him trying to be Shatner. And some of that works and some of it doesn't.
Of all of them... I mean, because if you look at Simon Pegg, he's the least Scotty of Scotties.
Yeah.
I mean, I love Simon Pegg. Hot Fuzz is one of my absolute favorite movies. But he was horrible as a Scotty character because he was trying to be Simon Pegg as a comedian, being Scotty, as opposed to being Montgomery Scott. And I know that line got crossed in Star Trek V where it was kind of unbelievable for James Doohan to still be acting as Scotty.
Like the back of my hand. Bang.
Yeah.
One throwaway scene from a otherwise horrible movie.
Yeah, defines the whole character
for all time.
Yeah. But then you get Carl Urban, who
was amazing.
Yeah. You know, you actually felt that he was Bones McCoy again. You know,
I mean, not only did you feel like he was McCoy, but you felt like he was DeForest Kelly
as McCoy.
McCoy.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that's really what they were trying to do with all of those characters, but some of them just didn't work out.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I agree. Well, and John Cho, he was okay. Now, Anton Yelchin as Chekhov was awesome.
But, and this is where I come back and say, well...
But he wasn't really Chekhov.
And he wasn't supposed to be there.
I know.
Not supposed to be there. When there are characters there that aren't supposed to be there, and there's not characters
there... Well, Chekhov wasn't even a character until the second season.
At least the second season.
Yeah.
Continuity matters.
It does matter. So let's.
We've not talked about Picard yet.
Season two, and that was my next thing.
Good. Let's hear your thoughts on that. Because I have some concerns.
Again, just to reiterate, Picard season two is going to premiere in February of 2022 on Paramount Plus, or Netflix if you're outside the United States. Or Amazon Prime, because some countries, Amazon Prime, that was also another interesting thing. One of the trailers that's on YouTube says Amazon Prime exclusive. Because it's obviously for...
I'm so tired of being punished for being an American.
Yeah, on some other market. But that being said, the we're finally... There's a full trailer. Again, it's out on YouTube. I'll provide the link in the show notes. But the big thing about Picard Season 2 is... Q comes in, he tells Picard that you're always being judged. Picard gives Q his piece of his mind, which is pretty...
That's pretty Jean-Luc at this point.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden, the future changes. So it's going to be... And don't get me wrong, I'm not certain I want to go to another alternate timeline, but at least Star Trek is the... first series that did alternate timelines with Mirror Mirror and TOS, and they consistently used the alternate timeline thing all the way through Discovery. But evidently the Federation and Earth and Starfleet and Picard ends up being some kind of like
tyrannical regime.
Yeah.
And it's not the Mirror Universe.
No, it's
near
not.
As I can tell.
No, it is not the Mirror Universe. But then they have to go back to the 21st century, our time.
Which, there's a casting note that has been released recently, which makes me somewhat concerned about this time travel business. Renee Witcher-Witcher-Ring was cast as the Borg Queen.
Yes.
And I know I just butchered her last name. I can never say her name. I don't know why, but I love her and everything she's been in. So you'd think I'd like to learn her name, but I just can't do it. I don't know how the Borg factor into this. Now that it's a time travel story, and I think it was interesting that we've been seeing the Q card is actually the Queen.
Yes.
And so now there's tie into the Borg Queen with that whole imagery motif as well.
Yep.
Where they're going with that, I don't know. I have no preconceived notions, and I've not heard anything. Have you heard anything about what they're going to do with that?
So my understanding is that the Borg is somehow... So in watching the trailer a couple of times through...
Right.
So even though this tyrannical regime thing happens, Picard and the crew of the Lost Arena, you know, the main cast of misfits who make up the series of Picard, their memories are unaffected.
Correct.
So and they need the Borg to go back in time because the Borg have time travel technology. Because
First Contact
set that up.
But you would think that having two former Borg in Seven of Nine and Locutus...
He was killed in Season 1. Or not Locutus, I'm thinking Hugh, sorry.
Yeah. Knowledge of that technology should be enough when you have the Borg Cube from the Borg Reclamation Project.
But again, we don't know what all has changed because of...
Well, that's true too.
You know? And we do know that, like, Seven has no longer has any of her implants. So
correct.
She was never a Borg.
So she's Annika, but...
And that would...
But if she still has her memories of...
Being Borg, yeah, but,
that
I mean...
shouldn't... Her ability to interact with the technology may be changed, but her knowledge of it wouldn't.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know. You know, again, that would be something you know, they're not going to give that away in the
right.
But that's my understanding, is that the Borg Queen and her ability to use the time travel technology is key to the traveling back to the 21st century. And they're supposed to, evidently, sometime in the 21st century, events happen that cause this tyrannical regime to come into play.
Right. And I'm hoping it's COVID.
That would be cool if they did that.
I think it would.
Yeah.
That would pair it, or some COVID-like, because it can't be COVID.
Yeah.
We have to be more subtle than that. Divock. Divock 91.
Yeah.
My fear with going back into now is we'll get heavy-handed.
Yes.
Anytime we do that, anytime Trek has done that, they
well, the other
feel like they have to just
the
bring
other
down
problem
the
is when they bring it back to, you know,
those Enterprise episodes are awful.
Well, anytime you bring a story back to the current time, you know, science fiction that's set in the future, and then you bring it back in current time, doesn't matter if it's Star Trek, Star Wars, Babylon 5, Deep Space Nine, what, you know, whatever it is, you then are putting bookends on parts of the story.
Yeah.
And it can be done well, which is the only part that Disney has done well with Star Wars, like with the Han Solo story and Rogue One. Or it can be done horribly, which has happened in innumerable science fiction series.
This is a gamble.
Yeah, it is a gamble. Well, the other thing that happens is because now you're bringing, even if you put it at, you go back to today, or you go back a couple of years ahead of us, you know, 21st century, hey, we're only in the first fifth of it. You have 80 years to play with there. The problem is, and this is the gamble with it, is that you're not far enough in the future to where people won't remember what it is. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, because it never happened this way, the suspension of belief cannot occur.
I just don't want it to get Space 1999.
Yeah.
I don't want September 13th, 1999 to come and go and what didn't happen.
Yeah, exactly. The moon didn't explode.
There you go.
So, but I have high hopes for it. I mean, it looks interesting. The production values look really good, just like Picard season one. It appears that they brought back all the same cast and characters, and you know, and there's some of them that are that kind of grew on you, like the captain of the Serena. I love him. I think he's of that show. He's my favorite character.
I can do without Space Legolas. And the doctor chick, the murderer, I can do without her.
Yeah. Allison Pill. that's the actress.
Yeah, no, I like her as an actress, but this character is now...
Yeah, she's tainted.
Forever.
Yeah.
Not that I'm a huge Bruce Maddox fan, but... And her reasoning for doing what she did can be attributable to the Romulan plot.
Yeah.
But I don't trust her.
Yeah.
And Star Trek, I'm supposed to trust the main characters.
Correct. They're supposed to be...
I'm supposed to like them.
They're not supposed to be morally ambiguous.
Correct. I mean, even if you're the villain, you're not ambiguous about it.
No. No. You should hear Shakespeare in the original Klingon.
Thank you.
Yeah. But, yeah, no, I agree. And it'll be interesting to see how much of John Delancey is in the show.
Agreed.
Because
he's not exactly young either.
No, no. No. I mean, he's not Patrick Stewart old, but...
Right, but, I mean, he's...
And that being said, they... Season 3 has already been announced that it's been renewed for Picard, and production is continuing. They wrapped up Season 2, and they're continuing production into Season 3. I have a feeling a lot of that is due to Patrick Stewart's age. Yeah. And my curiosity is once they wrap Season 3 and have it in the bag, you know, so that post-production can happen, if they take a very short hiatus... And they go on to Season 4. And the reason being is just because every year that goes on...
Yeah.
Patrick Stewart...
Well, he's going to get even older.
He's going to get even older. And if they want to have... I mean, the reality is the way that show is probably going to end is with Patrick Stewart's death.
Yes. I hate to say that, but that's probably true.
Because I don't know if he... I mean... He seems to be in good health.
Yeah,
but,
he does.
But, you know, at the age that he's at...
I mean, he's got to be like 90.
Let me look it up. I don't know if he's quite that old.
Or closing in on it.
Let me look in the old interwebs. So, Patrick Stewart... he was born in 1940... So in 2000, he's 81 years old. He'll be 82 in 2022. But, I mean, that being said...
Oh, yeah, that's right. Shatner's 90.
Yeah,
so.
Shatner's 90.
All right, I can buy that.
But that being said, that's still, he's no spring chicken.
Speaking of Shatner... Did you see that the other day where he's now talking about playing Kirk again?
No, I did not.
I have to dig that up. I was surprised because
Well, let me consult the Oracle right now.
Pretty sure he was adamant about not playing Kirk, but.
William Shatner interested in playing Kirk Prime for a 2023 Star Trek movie.
Yeah.
It's already got a script and a producer, J.J. Abrams.
Of course it does.
They must have a contract that they have to they have an obligation for. But. So, I mean, as far as Star Trek news goes, that's pretty much what Star Trek Day, all the announcements that they made. If you're not aware and you've been living in a box for the last month, CBS, so when CBS and Paramount became one again, they actually named a lady as the VP of marketing and franchisee, you know, where they can license out the to make Star Trek swag, whether it's action figures, shirts, t-shirts, communicators, uniforms, whatever. And they have given Playmates a new license for making new Star Trek action figures, presumably. I'm assuming that they're going to start with I belong to a lot of forums on action figures. I collect them and I sell them, you know. And the best, in my opinion, the best Star Trek action figures were the Enterprise and TOS figures by Art Asylum, who is now part of Diamond Select Toys. They were bought by... And part of the reason they were so good is they were like 6 to 8 inch action figures. They were highly, highly detailed, extremely good sculpting on not only the figures and their uniforms, and they had a unique way of doing the uniforms, which I think was brilliant. They made the articulated figure, and then they put a rubber uniform, molded uniform over them, so those Enterprise jumpsuits would move with the figure, but it hit all the joints. So it really looked like a posable statue. And then there was, you know, all the accessories, the phase pistols and communicators, and on the TOS ones, the phasers and all of that were highly, highly accurate. And then they also did, like Playmates before them, they made real two-scale props. Their props were so good that the TOS phaser that you see in the mirror episodes of Enterprise that Archer uses are actually Art Asylum props. Phasers, props. Yeah. The same ones they sold everybody else is actually used on screen. And so they made the TOS props, communicator, tricorder, and phaser, type 2 phaser, that the type 1 comes off. That was also part of what was so cool. And then they also made the phase pistol and communicator from Enterprise. I would have preferred, since we know that if you... Netflix has a great series of documentaries. My son is fascinated by them. Called The Toys Who Made Us. And they cover, you know, the resurgence of G.I. Joe. And actually, they go through all of G.I. Joe from the 60s to when they ended in, like, 77. To then 6 years later when they brought out G.I. Joe, A Real American Hero. That, you know, was the toy that I really grew up with.
Right.
Along, and they have one on Star Trek. So they start with the first licensee's toys and the good, the bad, and the ugly with those. And then how Marty Abrams, who was at the time, his dad owned Mego Toys, but he was kind of the guy in charge, and he is till today, how they made the original Star Trek figures and you know, how popular they were back in the 70s. And then they talk about Playmates, and there was a lot of criticism about Playmates and how they handled things, because what Playmates thought was that they made these Star Trek figures and they thought kids were going to play with them. And it wasn't kids who were buying them, it was adults. And then they started playing this game where we're going to have limited number of certain figures, and people got upset with Playmates. And their sales started to decline because they only made 5,000 of something that had a demand of, you know, 500,000. Now, that being said, they made millions of figures that nobody cared about. They made characters that were seen in a scene, you know, and
of an episode.
Of an episode.
No, not even a whole episode.
Yeah, they were seen, you know, they had 20 seconds of screen time in an episode because they were just trying to pump out more and more Star Trek stuff. And so it for a long period of time, and even to today, the value of the figures is not what you would expect it to be. Not when you compare it to, like, G.I. Joe, A Real American Hero, which was meant to be a kid's toy, or Transformers, which were meant to be a kid's toy. You know, so I, when they canceled that, and, you know, I was a person of two minds. So when Playmates lost their license to make Star Trek toys anymore, I was like, you know, are we going to have another 20 years of not having Star Trek toys?
And then
they started licensing to, like, Art Asylum and Diamond Select and a few others, and they were making these high-end ones, which were super expensive. That what was good about the Art Asylum ones is that they weren't super expensive, but they were high quality. The Diamond Select Kirk and Spock that they put out, where you got, like, four or five different heads and hands, and you could change them, and they were beautiful. But yeah. Those, I mean, this is in the early 2000s. Those were, like, hundreds of dollars a piece, because they also did the same sculpts and did them for a lot of the Star Wars ones. And I mean, some of the Star Wars early ones from Star Wars, those were they're going for thousands of dollars now, you know.
Here's my fear with Playmates getting the license again. I don't want to be Spider-Man. I don't want them to start over. I want them to continue the line.
I don't want them to the other thing is, at the end of Playmates, they were doing some stupid stuff. You had, like, the 12-inch dolls, you had, like, the 4.5-inch figures, and then you had, like, these 7-inch figures, which were weird. I want one size figure. I don't want a 12-inch doll. I think you should go to where the Star Wars Black, the new G.I. Joe classified series figures are, which are all, and that's the thing, the Hasbro has these G.I. Joe classified figures. They're 6 inches, which is 1/12 scale. You can buy accessories outside of them that work. Actually, I've 3D printed some accessories for some of mine that I have on display. But they're high quality. The sculpts are really good. And that's the way the Star Wars Black series figures are too. They're high quality. The sculpts are really good. That's what I want them to come out with. A 1/12 scale, high quality, really nice accessories, and package them in boxes, you know, with a cellophane front as opposed to a blister package. So one, if you want to, you can just cut the tape and you can pull a figure out, but it doesn't destroy the packaging. So you can then put the figure back in if you want to store it later. But I want something better than what they did last time. And I want them to be very thoughtful about what they produce. Now, what I've heard, and there's not a lot of information out because these figures will not be announced until... at least the initial figures will not be announced until Toy Fair. Yeah. Which, when is Toy Fair? Again, we're going to ask the Oracle.
I thought that was a September thing.
I think it is too. Because they're supposed to be released in 2022.
Yeah.
So they usually, prior to release... because Toy Fair is for retailers to come in and choose the products that they want, you know. So they can see what's coming out, and then they can get their orders in, so then they can manufacture the first run of these products and get them done. And I will say this, the Star Wars Black figures, like the Gina Carano figure from Mandalorian, mm-hmm. and even the Mandalorian figure, I've never seen another one, but I ordered the Mandalorian figure when he came out for pre-order. And that was in November of 2019. I didn't get it until November of 2020.
Wow.
Let's see. It says that 2022 Toy Fair 2022. Oh, it's February 19th through 22nd, so it will not be until February that we see these, more than likely. So actually that might, but my assumption is that we're gonna get, out of the initial figures, we're gonna get probably, well, most definitely, I've heard we'll get some Discovery figures. We'll probably get some Picard figures. I'm hoping that we get some Strange New World figures. And possibly some Lower Deck figures. There's a lot of people who've been going, well, you know, I want this odd, because there's this huge, with Playmates figures, there is, because they produce so many.
Mm-hmm.
There's a whole bunch of people who do customizations.
Yes.
Like, they never made a Kai Wynn figure, and I saw pictures of somebody who made a Kai Wynn figure that was beautiful. So yeah. Well done. There's a lot of times where I've seen pictures of where people have taken the Enterprise crew figures in Monster Maroons.
Yep.
And made entire bridge crews. So yep. they made a Sulu and a Chekhov, and because I think they only had Spock and Kirk in the Monster Maroons, didn't they? And Kirk was an admiral in his.
Generations, they had a Chekhov.
But they've taken those figures because they made so many of them, and they've changed heads around, or they've sculpted new heads, and you, in these forums, you'll, and in the collector forums, like, I hope they have a Kirk in this outfit. And I'm like, look, there's a million Kirk action figures out there. There's a million yeah. Picard action figures out there. If you're going to do somebody that they've done before, but they don't have a whole lot of, I would rather see a Sisko or another Janeway, because there were very few Janeway figures made.
That is true.
You know? Same thing with Tom Paris. He's a fan favorite. And I think there was only one sculpt of Tom Paris, and that was in his uniform, you know. But it'd be cool, like, have Tom Paris in the Delta Flyer uniform. Yeah, I mean, you know, if you're going to go back and do some of this. Now, on the long haul, yes, they'll certainly go back and pick from that, but right now, but
for the first run,
yeah, probably for the first two or three runs of, you know, of adding figures, I don't think they're going to go back. It's all going to be the new stuff, because that's what, if I were Paramount, that's what I want you to advertise, because that's the stuff that goes along with our current programming.
Yeah.
And as a collector, that's the stuff I want. I have 400 Kirks. I have 50 Picards, you know. That being said, Kirk is one of my favorite characters, but Picard's not. You know, in TNG world, Riker was my favorite character from that cast.
And that's because he was Kirk with a beard.
Yeah. But, you know, and O'Brien was always one of my favorite characters. But as I've gotten older, Sisko has become one of my favorite characters. I can't watch the show, but I read so many of the comic books where Sisko was involved. And I was like, man, they've really made him into a cool character.
I honestly think you ought to give it another shot.
I probably will. I'll probably...
But do like we do with all those shows, starting about the third season.
That's what I was going to say. It's going to start about the third season.
Man, there's...
But, like, Playmates never made any of the Enterprise crew.
That is true.
You know, that was Art Asylum had those.
Yep.
I would like to see them do some of the Enterprise crew. Like, it would be cool to see Archer and Tucker in the away team khakis.
Yeah.
Because they never, Art Asylum never made that. Art Asylum only made the EVA suits and then the blue jumpsuits.
Yeah.
And stuff. So, okay, so let's move on. This is going to be a long episode, guys, because there was a lot to talk about. I mean, we're at an hour and 21 minutes just from Star Trek. But there's a couple things, housekeeping things I want to talk about. I want to talk about MCU and the Scarlett Johansson, which we kind of talked about a little bit. But so, I read an article, Benedict Cumberbatch made some statements, you know, kind of in support of Scarlett Johansson. And I think part of it is he's drawing the line for Disney publicly, saying that you can't do me like you did her.
Right.
And Shang-Chi and the story of the Ten Rings came out and they did not stream it for the first time in a new Disney movie.
Yeah. Since the COVID thing.
And that was in direct response to, to Scarlett Johansson, because the way they did the contract, here's the nuance in it. Disney decided that revenue from streaming it on Disney Plus, where you had to pay for the movie as a premium on top of your subscription, did not count into her contract. But her claim is that by streaming it, you took away from box office sales, and so you denied her money. And just the way the contract is written, it is Disney's, it's part of Disney as the distributor of the product, is to protect her income. And that's the key and the goal of all of the, what's going on. Now, that being said, you have Warner Brothers, on the other hand, who is the streaming, anything extra for streaming, they're paying the people for all the movies. Because Warner Brothers, and it is a successful model, because I love every month or two getting a brand new movie that just came out in the movie theaters and get to watch it at home on my 75-inch 4K TV. You know, it's a better experience than any movie theater ever could be. You know, how many movie theaters let you bring your dog in and let them sit on the couch with you? You know? Or how many movie theaters let you pause the movie, go to the bathroom, get a snack in the kitchen, come back and restart it? Or it's late and this movie is like 2.5 hours long, like Zack Snyder's Justice League. And so you stop the movie and then resume it the next day. You know, that's what movie theaters need to figure out. And they're never going to figure it out, because that's not how movie theaters work. And it will never be how a movie theater can work.
They're going to have to change their model. And what I mean by that is that they're going to have to do like a Netflix, what Netflix had to do. Netflix started out as a DVD rental.
Correct. Yeah, basically, where
they became a streaming service.
Where they were different from Family Video was that you would go onto a website and you'd pick the the DVD you have, or the DVD, depending on, you know, you could get 1 to 5 DVDs depending on the level of service, and they would let you rent them, and they would ship them to you, and then gave you free shipping to ship them back. And it was great. And that's where movie theaters need to go. I think there will be people who will put up with the movie theater experience because of nostalgia. They like it. But I think movie theaters were already a contracting market before COVID. We knew that this streaming services and everything were eating away at them. COVID kind of accelerated the contraction. And I just don't think we need as many movie theaters as we used to. They cost a lot to operate. They don't, and unless you get people to buy concessions, they're not making a whole lot of money per ticket. You know, you have to have a lot of people. And in today's where you can't get anybody to frickin' work, movie theaters just don't exist. And so I think the movie distributors need to all go to the Warner Brothers model, which is, if you own a streaming service and you're going to have movies, for right now, yeah, we'll distribute them to movie theaters, but on the same day, we're going to distribute them to our platform, whether it is a premium charge, which doesn't seem to be working.
Correct.
Or not.
Well, that's because now the rest of the world is getting screwed by these streaming services like the rest of us Americans are.
Yes.
And they don't like that.
Yeah.
Big surprise! Because Americans don't like it either.
Well, the other thing is, if Warner Brothers, who owns HBO and HBO Max, hadn't decided to do what they did,
yeah,
it would be a little bit different story.
Yeah.
But because they did, and it's working for them, and they got a lot... What ended up happening is the money that they would make at one time,
yeah,
for some movie now becomes a recurring monthly revenue.
Yep.
That they're realizing that this is a much better way to distribute movies. I don't have to... I just have to set up a website and a streaming service. I don't have to send cans of film out or send digital files over the wire or yep. anything. It is just unadulterated providing entertainment. And, you know, what most people don't realize is movies are not made by Warner Brothers. They might fund some of it if they think it's big enough, but they're typically made by independent movie companies who then sign an agreement with, like, it's just like the music industry. They sign an agreement with Warner Brothers or Disney or whoever, and they become the distributors who take on the marketing and distribution of a movie. And they put margin on it, you know?
Yeah.
And that margin is what you pay at the movie theater or what you pay for the streaming service. And Disney's quickly finding out that their cachet is not good enough to have it. And the other people who have hurt that industry and why I think Warner Brothers made the decision to do what they did is Apple with Apple TV Plus, because they're producing very high quality movies. Greyhound was a great one with Tom Hanks.
Mm-hmm.
And then Netflix. I would say Netflix is some of their movies end up being extremely good, but that is probably in the 1%.
But you know what?
But they produce
every movie house does that.
Well, exactly. They produce enough B-movies
yeah.
that you will find something entertaining. And every year that goes by, Netflix is getting more... They're signing more and more deals with mainstream stars.
Yes.
And again, they don't charge extra. Apple TV doesn't charge extra. You get to go home, watch high-quality entertainment, and...
The Disney thing... $20 to watch Black Widow?
It was not worth it.
I wouldn't go to the theater and shell out $20 to watch Black Widow.
Yeah.
Knowing that eventually it's going to come to the streaming service.
For free.
For whatever it is you're paying a month. Because I recognize it's not really
for free. Well, it's not really for free. But yeah, it's not an additional cost.
You know, I'm not going to do it.
Yeah.
And I think if you're like me, you have enough of these services now where you're shelling out probably $40-$50 a month.
Yep. It's still cheaper than cable,
yeah.
but it's not an insignificant amount of money.
Right.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. But the other thing is people, even the streaming services are learning this, and that's why they're specializing. I mean, to a large degree, Paramount Plus, yes, you have all of Paramount CBS's back catalog, and you are getting, they have certain shows, like Paramount has Evil and Why Women Kill and Star Trek, and but the, you know, the reality of it is Paramount Plus is a Star Trek network.
Yeah,
that's who they're, the Star Trek and NCIS. That's who they're gonna.
And they I keep saying, there are two things that will get me to finally buy into Paramount Plus. One, they stop screwing me over and screw over everyone else. Mm-hmm. Or two, they develop an NCIS Paramount Plus exclusive show.
Yes.
One of those two things will finally get me to buy Paramount Plus.
And I think it's coming. I think broadcast TV over the air might be something when you talk about ABC, CBS, NBC, and Fox and the CW, the five major networks, mm-hmm. they're showing far less new content on those stations than they are in their streaming services. And that's because people aren't watching over-the-air, even over-the-air TV. Now, will the FCC hold on to over-the-air TV for a long time? Yes. And will there be over-the-air television stations? But I think there are going to be things like MeTV, and those are going to be the things you're going to get over-the-air, you know, where they're showing syndicated.
Ultimately, it's going to come down to being max headroom.
Yes,
you're gonna see, and it's really started to already kind of go that direction, where it's,
well, people don't want to see advertising anymore.
Well,
and so,
and who would?
Yeah, and so, you know, when they want to watch a show, they want to watch a, you know, they want to spend 30 minutes to an hour to watch something or invest their time into it. They don't want commercials to interrupt it. You know, the other thing is ABC, CBS, you know, all of them.
But what I meant by that was that you're gonna see people doing their own networks.
Yes.
They're gonna air the shows they want. They'll buy those shows and they'll air those shows and they'll develop their own programming around those shows.
Well, that's exactly what MeTV has done.
Exactly.
You know, they essentially, they have gone back and on Friday nights they have Dr. Demento.
Yeah.
You know.
Exactly. That is exactly what's gonna happen.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. And, you know, there's other stations, like there's the Western Station and there's ION, and these other networks have come up that live on sub-channels. I think at some point, if the major networks continue to provide programming on there, it will only be news and weather.
And quite frankly, you don't need an over-the-air channel for that.
No.
All you really need
is your phone.
Is your phone.
But also, it's expensive the way it works for them. Yeah. They have to find advertisers. They have to keep a marketing staff. I mean, yeah, there are bigger issues that we could delve into here. But, you know, there's a lot of cost. There's a lot of cost in maintaining and keeping the broadcast equipment. But the biggest thing is with a streaming service, there's no network censorship. So they can produce the shows that people really will pay to see. So the last thing I want to talk about is September 14th, which is Tuesday. Apple's having their next big event. It looks to be an iPhone event. Might be some other surprises in there. Not sure. I will do an episode, probably me and Thomas, on Tuesday when it's done, and we'll talk about what we saw and what we liked, what we disliked. My suspicion is Apple's not going to dump everything in a single show or thing. We'll see a once a month release of new products starting on Tuesday, ending somewhere in November, so that they have products that they're going to announce products that they already have in distribution centers so that they can then distribute by Christmas. Cell phones always come first, because those, even though you can buy them directly from Apple, you got to have it tied to a carrier in the United States. So, you know, T-Mobile, Verizon, and AT&T, you have to enable them to be able to add the phones to their network, have them ready for distribution. and all of that. So, thank you for listening to our show. It's an awful long one this time. Hey, we want to hear back from you. Please send feedback to gizmosapiens@gmail.com or check our website out at www.gizmosapiens.gmail.com, and we will see you on the digital flip side.
You've been listening to Gizmo Sapiens, a technology and entertainment podcast. You can reach us at our email address at gizmosapiens@gmail.com. That's gizmosapiens@gmail.com. We'd really love to hear from you, and we'll see you next week from the digital flip side.